The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. While I'm on vacation, I've left you in the capable hands of Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Once again, his Bradness.
Capable, huh? Oh, boy, talk about adding pressure. I can't even hit the right music cue. Here we go. There we go. We got it. Are we coming? Is he? We're learning this. There we go. Capable, huh? Close enough. USSR, that could only mean one thing. That would be Peter B. Collins' weekly Wednesday guest when she shows up. I hope she's here today because I've been missing this girl. Larissa Alexandrovna is going to be with us here momentarily on the PBC show. I'm your friendly guest host, sitting in for your humble host, Peter B. I would be your friendly guest host, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Want to make sure you try to stop by the Brad blog. We've got an open thread at the top of the blog where you can come in and leave your comments there, and maybe I'll try to notice them. Agent 99 is there, keeping an eye on the chat room and keeping you up to date with important links and other stuff. Agent 99, oh, she's having trouble hearing you guys. My ears are clean. Well, let's hope it's not our end. We have been having some problems with the ISDN from here in Houston, Texas, where we're going to be all week and all next week. But hopefully we got that sorted out. Larissa Alexandrovna in a second, but I did not want to let this go by without noting it here today. Cheney drops to new low of 30% approval rating in Gallup poll. 30%! I thought he was down to like 13 or 18, something like that. Anyway, new Gallup poll. Dick Cheney has sunk to a new low in a new Gallup poll, that is. The Gallup survey finds Cheney's approval rating at 30%, down 4 points from last month and a record low for a vice president since Gallup started in 1945. A record low. Congratulations, Dick. Keep up the good work. Even more surprisingly, his job approval rating among Republicans, although a bit higher, is also at its lowest point yet, 57%. His approval ratings among independents is a dismal 26%, barely one in four. So I don't think we have it here, but I guess Democratic approval rating's got to be about 2. Congratulations, Dick. As I say, keep up the good work. Speaking of which, by the way, a new report out from Pew Internet and American Life finds that online activists reflect the general population in their political opinions and political attitudes. This is an interesting point. If you've been watching, what's his name, that guy, Bill O'Reilly, something like that, over at Fox News, he's been beating up on Daily Kos, the popular blog site, saying that they're all a bunch of crazies and hate mongers. Well, what do you know? This new poll from Pew Internet and American Life finds that online political activists are said to mirror the general population of those who are civically active. As a group, they are evenly divided between men and women with a racial and ethnic composition that is not very different from the general population. Furthermore, many of the causes supported by the Netroots have broad support across the country. In a recent analysis of public opinion polls, Center for American Progress fellow Ray Texera found that 68% of Americans support withdrawal from Iraq within a year, a key issue for the Netroots. Over three-quarters of Americans believe that the effect of global warming are apparent now, with 60% favoring immediate action to address the problem. Like the progressive blogosphere, and this is a report from American Progress, like the progressive blogosphere, a solid majority of Americans believe President Bush should not have commuted the sentence of his former aide, Scooter Libby. 7 in 10 Americans believe that current discrepancies between income levels are too large. A majority of Americans support either gay marriage, 27%, or civil unions, 24%, while 79% of Americans believe openly gay people should be able to serve in the military. A majority of Americans say the federal government should guarantee health insurance to every American, especially children, and are willing to pay higher taxes to do it. These political priorities, which the Netroots are working to make a reality, are the priorities of the majority of Americans. Of course, that's not a message I need to get to Bill O'Reilly. He ain't going to pay attention anyway. It might be a message that I need to get to Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, the Democrats, our old friend Rush Holt in Congress from New Jersey, who's trying to pass election reform legislation but is ignoring what the people want, which is elections that we can count on. We'll certainly be talking about more about that in our third hour, our Election Integrity Hour. So it's not the nut roots, it's the net roots, and the net roots are right. They're just like America. Don't let anybody tell you they ain't. All right, speaking of the nut roots, why do I even say that sort of thing? Because I don't mean it. I love Larissa. Larissa Alexandrovna from rawstory.com. Oh, Larissa, how are you there?
Nutty. How are you?
Oh, see, I'm fine. Now, we haven't talked in months, and already I'm taking these inappropriate shots for no reason whatsoever at you.
I'm sure there's...
I missed you. Haven't talked to you in a while. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Are you?
Watching the world unravel.
The wheels are really coming off, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, and they're doing... It's international, the disaster, so it's alarming, to say the least.
It is, and you know what? I want to thank you, Larissa, because you are covering the international picture and so much of what certainly the American media covers, and to a certain extent what I cover at bradblog.com is sort of America-centric in a certain sense. But you've reached out. You've got sources overseas and undercover and everywhere else. And you were, am I right about this, Larissa? Were you the first one to report on the secret prisons overseas?
No. I was not the first one. That was Dana Priest at the Washington Post.
Oh.
But she did not disclose the location of the prisons. I was the first to report on one prison in particular, the one in Poland at a facility in a village called Sierkiewicz Kuty. So that's more accurate to say. I revealed the location, but I was not the first to report on the prisons.
I see. And when you revealed the location, did you get the kind of blowback that we certainly saw, for example, coming that the New York Times received when they reported on intelligence information? Did you get any kind of blowback in that sense?
Well, the strange thing is the blowback came from Poland. The prime minister and the head of intelligence, their counterpart to our DCI here, Director of Central Intelligence, spent, 24 to 48 hours, on every television show, basically smearing me left and right.
Really? By name?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, by name. Wait, well, I bought my article, by the way, I wasn't the only one on the byline. I bylined with a former Polish intelligence agent who was a double agent for the CIA, and he went on the byline with me because he was concerned about me doing it alone. So having an intelligence agent on a byline with you tends to get a lot of people's attention.
How did you know that they were bad-mouthing you in Poland, Larissa?
Because it was picked up on the wires. I mean, not only my article was translated into all sorts of different languages, German, Swedish, you name it, even Turkish, if I remember correctly. But then their response was also translated. And, in fact, the first word I heard about the smear campaign was from the German wire service. It was interesting, to say the least.
Well, it is. They probably, the reason you probably got caught more hell from overseas is because they probably paid more attention to the story than the American media did.
Because, here... people think that, if somebody reports something, in other words, the Washington Post reported on this program, that means any further reports are old news. But in reality, it was new information. it was that here's the location of this facility. Mm-hmm. Here's the airport near this facility. Here's what they're doing at this facility and how they're doing it. So it was much more information in the specific in terms of Poland. But in the States, you know, they figured, okay, well, you know, we already had that whole story with the extraordinary rendition, so it's old news. You know, but in Poland, it was taken very seriously. Well, not just in Poland, actually, the European Union took it very seriously.
Well, because they know what news is. Listen, let me take a quick break, and we'll try to also get to some calls for you. If you want to talk to Larissa or myself, 888-5-PETER-B, give us a call. We're going to be back. I had a question I wanted to hit Larry Johnson with in the last hour. Apparently, CIA dissenters aided in that secret prisons report. We're going to ask Larissa about that when we come back, and anything else that happens to be on your mind. Thanks for tuning in to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman. We'll be back for more.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner. Stop by 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road or call Chef Stephen Lowe at 663-488 for carry out to die for.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me. Ease my mind, imagine how the world could be. So very fine, so happy together.
To the Peter B. Collins Show. That's my love song for you, Larissa. You're listening to Brad Friedman, sitting in for PBC today, speaking with Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com. The great Larissa from the great RawStory.com. All right, I wanted to follow up here on these secret prisons that Larissa's been working on for quite a while. There's a Reuters story out today. Saying that dissident U.S. intelligence officers angry at former Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld helped a European probe uncover details of secret CIA prisons in Europe. Mm-hmm. There were huge conflicts between the CIA and Rumsfeld, says Swiss Senator Dick Marty, author of a Council of Europe report on the jails. Many leading figures in the CIA did not accept these methods at all, and I guess they were angry about it. Does that sync up with your reporting on this issue, Larissa?
Yes, it does, and it also syncs up with the domestic sources that we had for the article, why they explained why they were providing the information, and the reasons given were that they felt that it was a dangerous policy and put not only our soldiers but our officers in danger abroad. And it also does not provide any good intelligence, because people will say anything to stop being tortured. So there was a lot of concern. And so, yes, this absolutely – this is not a surprise. What's a surprise to me, though, and I thought it was a Washington Post article, actually, was that the Washington Post – initially ran the extraordinary rendition story. And I know that they were in receipt of the same information with regard to Poland that I was later given, and they chose the Post, not the reporter, mm-hmm. not to run it. And we did give them the opportunity to comment for my article way back when I wrote it. And obviously they didn't want to talk beyond their actual reporting within the confines of that article. But they were given the location, the same information with regard to how this was being done and why investigators could not locate the facilities exactly.
Yeah.
And they didn't run the story. And frankly, you know, there was a lot of frustration from people who, you know, went to a great deal of risk to provide this information to the reporters. So, you know, this article, while it's new to the public, to me, you know, I already, it's not new. And, yes, it absolutely jives with everything that at least I know with regard to Poland. I don't know enough about Romania, but Poland, absolutely. And it's nice to see Poland finally mentioned elsewhere in print.
Yes, don't forget about Poland.
Well, you know, there's a whole new irony to that phrase now.
There really is.
Well, you know, the other irony is that the facility we're using in Poland, it was a former Soviet interrogation facility.
Mm.
So, you know, it's really, we've really come around, you know.
Yeah, things are looking great, aren't they? And in fact, this article goes on to say that the Americans themselves admitted that there were secret prisons, that they abducted people from the streets, that people were handed over to countries like Syria, Yemen, Egypt, where they were tortured. Is this, has there been any accountability? Has there been any admission of any of this? Is Congress, is anything going on, or is this one of those stories that's just... slips into the memory hole that Raw Story covers, and then nobody here in America actually, well, there is no accountability.
Raw Story's covering it because it's still making the mainstream news, and it's still very important in the European Union because Poland is, after all, a democracy.
Mm.
And part of the European Union, admitting to being part of this could jeopardize their standing in the union. But they're not the only government. There's allegations of a facility in Germany. There's allegations of a facility in Italy. So there's other Western European countries and, you know, in general, European countries, not just, you know, third world places that we've admitted to. And what we've admitted to, that is what this administration has admitted to, is we don't torture. We simply take people to places where they do torture.
Right.
Okay?
It's on a junket. It's
right,
just
exactly.
Letting them see the world.
Right. What they haven't admitted to is that we do torture because the people running the facility, for example, the black operation facility in
yeah.
Poland, once they entered the building, it was no longer Polish territory. It was CIA territory. It was a military installation, but it was a privately held military installation, kind of like interrogating somebody at Lockheed Martin.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so all of the sources have said the same thing. Once the plane landed, everything was handed over to Western intelligence. The interrogations were handled by Western intelligence. All of it.
Yeah.
So we do torture.
We do torture, but will anybody ever pay a price for it? I don't know. Larissa Alexandrovna from RawStory.com. Larissa, we're going to talk to you again next week. Thanks so much for being here, and good to talk to you again. Much, much more coming up on the Peter B. Collins Show. Oh, immigration? Yeah, we'll be back.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments, providing a unique perspective to investors for over 50 years. Franklin Templeton Investments gain from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. In pop culture, the so-called biological clock is always portrayed as a woman's problem. Remember Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny?
My biological clock is ticking like this. I ain't never getting married.
But now there's mounting evidence that the clock is ticking for men, too. Dr. Harry Fish has written a book called The Male Biological Clock.
You have a decline in hormones, a decline in fertility as women age, and an increased chance of genetic abnormalities to the babies born from older women. Well, surprise, that's exactly what happens to men.
More after this. I want to tell you about a place in Europe just waiting to be discovered where breathtaking natural wonders leave even a seasoned traveler speechless. Ancient castles where you can live like a king. Bustling cities where culture, fine dining, and vibrant nightlife meet. The place is Ireland. Don't be surprised, because in Ireland, not a day goes by without something new being discovered. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com or call 1-800-SHAMROCK for your free Ireland vacation planner.
Do you have a big presentation coming up? Need great-looking documents done right and on time? The Office Depot Design Print and Ship Depot will take care of it. Only at Office Depot will you find Xerox-certified print specialists to make sure your job is done right, guaranteed. Stop by an Office Depot store or visit us online 24/7 to request professionally prepared documents. Xerox-certified print specialists. Only at Office Depot, where we guarantee your documents are done right.
A man's fertility begins to decline in his 30s and steadily drops through his 40s and 50s, says CBS News medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook.
A woman is born with all the eggs she will ever have, but a man produces 100 million sperm each day through cell division. The more often a cell divides, the more likely a glitch will occur as genes are copied. With billions of sperm cells dividing over a man's lifetime, that's a lot of opportunity for error.
Dr. Dolores Malaspina is professor and chairman of the psychiatry department at New York University Medical Center.
We've known about a lot of problems for aging fathers, but it turns out the most common ones will be those related to behavioral disorders. So schizophrenia, and now autism, mental retardation, and some cases of Alzheimer's disease have all been linked to late paternal age.
Jim Katchko was 42 when his first child, John, was born. At age 3, John was diagnosed with autism.
You don't plan to have children later in life. It just works out that way.
The Katchkos enrolled John in a special program, and he did well in the first grade. There's no proof that older fathers cause autism in the children, but some doctors now think children of older fathers should be screened.
If I, as an older father, am contributing or could be contributing to the likelihood that he's autistic, then we need to know that.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters in Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
5-4-3-2.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and your humble host is away, but the show must go on. And now, from Houston, here's more from Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
Coming to America, you know the story. Of course, Republicans want to get them out of America. Because they got nothing better to do. They got no better ideas. They can't figure out how the hell to win elections. We've been traveling far. Unless they beat up on defenseless immigrants. Without a home. Brilliant. Not without a star. Yeah. All right, you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm Brad Friedman, as our good friend PBC, who's across, speaking of being overseas, he's overseas. He's in Italy. He's unimmigrating. Emigrating, right? Yeah, he said he was going away to get away from Bush for a while. That's what he said. For 3 weeks. 3 weeks away from Bush. Well, sounds good to me. Anyway, we're going to be speak with on this very topic with Allison Parker, a senior researcher at Human Rights Watch. She's just released a report on the effect of the U.S. deportation laws and how they harm American families. I don't believe it. I can't believe that a Bush policy would harm an American family. They love American families. And just to back up this point, Tom DeLay tells us, this is an incredible story reported today over at rawstory.com by Michael Rostin. Former Republican Majority Leader Tom DeLay told a gathering of college Republicans, get ready for this, that a link exists between legal abortion and illegal immigration in America. Yeah. The reports were included in a video produced by writer Max Blumenthal and posted over at Huffington Post. Here's what DeLay said. I contend abortion affects you in immigration, DeLay told the Washington area gathering. If we had 40 million children that were killed over the last 30 years, we wouldn't need the illegal immigrants to fill the jobs that they are doing today. Think about it, said Tom DeLay. Oh, man. Blumenthal was later apparently forcibly escorted out of the conference by the college Republican staff. That'll learn them. So all of those abortions, I guess, they would be serving the job that Mexicans are doing, picking strawberries. Or, man, are these people sick. Well, to get an idea of how sick they are, our next guest, Allison Parker, senior researcher at Human Rights Watch. I think that's hrw.org. Do I have that right? We'll find out. Allison, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for your report. I want to get to that in a moment. Did you hear that Tom DeLay story?
I just heard it from you for the first time.
Mighty impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's remarkable.
It really is. These guys are unbelievable. And frankly, your report here, released today, so this is breaking news here, underscores just how unbelievable they are. Give us an idea of what your report found today, Allison.
Well, what we focused on in this report are actually laws that have been in place since 1996. They were actually put in place during the Clinton administration. And what they do is they make individuals deportable after conviction for a crime, but a huge range of crimes, things very minor such as shoplifting, possession of small amounts of drugs, can render a person deportable from this country. They're deportable after serving their criminal convictions, and these laws apply to legal immigrants, not undocumented immigrants only, but also to legal immigrants. And what we found is that in the 10 years the laws have been in place, 672,000 people have been deported, and we estimate that those deportations have resulted in the separation of 1.6 million children and spouses from their loved ones.
Now, on what basis, then, are they deporting these immigrants? These are legal immigrants, and they have a minor crime. I think you've got you list a couple of the bullet points here. Father of three U.S. citizen children convicted of breaking into a car, stealing a $10 bottle of eye drops from a drugstore, and he's deported?
That's right. Yes, there's a long list of crimes that Congress decided to make mandatory deportation grounds. So they include things like shoplifting, as in the example you just cited, drug possession, forging a check, and they run up to very serious violent crimes that one might more likely expect to be a crime that would render somebody deportable, like first-degree murder. The point is that we believe that these crimes should be a part of a process in which judges give people a chance to talk about the reasons why they believe they should be allowed to remain in the country, including family relationships, tax payments. Many of the immigrants have actually served in the U.S. military, and yet they can't raise those issues before they are mandatorily deported from the United States, never allowed to return to the country again.
Now, just so I understand this, these are crimes that if an American citizen had committed them, breaking into a car, for example, they would either get jail time, they would be put out on probation or something like that. These guys are automatically deported for this?
That's exactly right. And let me emphasize something else. They serve a criminal sentence. So they serve whatever several months or might even be a few years if the crime is a little bit more serious.
And then they're deported?
They have paid their debts to society. And on top of that, they are then mandatorily deported.
That's incredible. And this, now you've got families that have children. The children themselves are citizens. Are they deported as well, or are they just have to face the choice of whether to split up the families or not at that point?
The children are left to make that choice. And one of the incredible things about so many of the hearing transcripts that I've looked at is that judges say things to families like, well, just take those kids back with you. When children are enrolled in schools, have lived in this country their whole lives, have medical reasons for needing to be in the United States, and want to remain in the United States with the spouse of the deportee who him or herself may actually be a U.S. citizen. So there's a real insensitivity to the real family relationships that exist in this country, which is a little bit ironic given the emphasis on family values in the current administration.
Well, indeed. And has this gotten, and by the way, I forgot to give out the number at the bottom of the hour, 888-5-PETER-B. We'd love to take your calls. For Allison Parker from Human Rights Watch, do you have data in your report? Has this gotten worse, better, or is it about the same since these laws were enacted under Clinton in 96?
96,
yeah. Has it gotten any worse under this particular administration?
Well, every year since the laws were passed, the number of immigrants who have been deported under these laws has increased. So it certainly has gotten worse with each passing year. And, of course, as you can imagine, the family relationships, the families that have been split apart as a result, continue to increase.
Yeah, I would imagine. Well, I would imagine they would. And of course, one of the things that I cover over at bradblog.com is election law, a lot of election law. And we're seeing something akin to that there, where they're finding these very small crimes. The Justice Department has been doing this, finding these very small crimes, in many cases situations where voters didn't even know, or where a citizen or someone who was an immigrant wasn't supposed to vote, or a felon didn't know they weren't supposed to vote, where they voted, and they're being thrown in jail or they're being deported. And again, these are legal citizens who are married to an American, who have American children here. It's like they're finding any excuse and completely forgetting about the family values that they act like they care about.
That's right.
I'm sorry?
That's absolutely right. I mean, the other thing that's true in the case that you cite, and that's true in terms of immigration enforcement, is that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, is the main agency responsible for these deportations. And they very often will issue press releases in which they highlight one case of deportation, and it's always the worst and most violent offense.
Of course.
So they will say, Mr. Smith was deported to X country. He was convicted of first-degree murder and rape and is a repeat sexual offender. And 562 other criminal aliens were deported this month by ICE. And what these press releases reveal is the way in which that agency is not being upfront with the American public, and actually with Congress, who passed these laws 10 years ago, about who exactly is being deported. Which is why we thought it was important to highlight the fact that 64% are actually being deported for nonviolent offenses.
Do they have any recourse when something like this happens? Is there any appeal? Is there anything that they can do to, bring a claim against the government, say, no, you can't split me up from my family, I'm here legally, and so on and so forth?
No, it's a great question, and that's exactly why we've issued this report. We think that Congress should reinstate hearings in which people could have a right to have an immigration judge look at the seriousness of the offense for which they've been convicted, look at the fact that they have family members, that they may have served in the U.S. military, they may own businesses, they may have lived lawfully in the country for 30 years. And that those things should be weighed before the deportation occurs. Right now, people have no right to raise those issues.
So that's not even brought into, for example, if you've got a crime, a murder a crime or anything else, usually during the sentencing, the victims, the people who are affected, even supporters of the criminal get to show up and say how terrific they are. No process like that in this situation at all.
No process whatsoever, and what you're pointing to is a very important distinction. This is an immigration hearing. It's not a criminal hearing, and all of these people who have been deported, as I said before, have gone through a criminal hearing, and they have been sentenced, and they have served their criminal sentences. What we're talking about is an immigration procedure that is laid on top of that, and after people serve their time. And during those hearings, Congress gets to say what these people get. The Constitution has nothing really to say about it, unfortunately, given what the U.S. Supreme Court has said over the years in terms of what non-citizens are allowed under the Constitution. And so those kinds of testimonies about from family members or from people who want to speak on behalf of the non-citizen just don't happen.
Very interesting. I want to come back ask you a little bit more certainly about this, but also about the political side of this, where these laws come from, what they're really about, and, of course, my point of view on this matter, which is that this entire immigration issue and these tough-on-immigrants laws, whether it's legal immigrants or illegal undocumented immigrants, I think it's a big phony issue. It's only here for political purposes, and it's left to folks like our guest Allison Parker from Human Rights Watch to fight back and tell the cost of this political scheme. We'll also try to take your calls, 888-5-PETER-B. We're going to be back with Allison Parker. And, at the top of the hour, we'll kick off our first daily election integrity hour. So much more ahead. Thanks for listening in. We'll be right back.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
There we go. Okay, Santa Clara, San Tomas Expressway, northbound at 101. Two-vehicle crash involved there, so CHP on the scene. Also looking at King City, southbound 101 after Highway 198. Chunks of wood debris in the lanes. Monterey, northbound 1 at Munras, crash there.
Listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com sitting in for Peter today and for the next week and a half. We're speaking with Allison Parker of Human Rights Watch, HRW.org. You can check out her full report there today on the cost to American families of mandatory deportation laws. They basically send home legal, perfectly documented immigrants, send them home for minor crimes, even though they've got children who are citizens here. It's a pretty incredible story. Give us a call, by the way, if you happen to have a family member or know someone who has been deported under these laws at 888-5-PETER-B. We'd love to hear from you, and Allison will also answer your questions. Brings up an interesting point, Allison Parker. How did you find out about these stories? Surely these were not documented as far as the record. You must have had to really do some digging to find out just some of the stories that are detailed, the heartbreaking stories that are detailed in your report.
Yes, that's true. I did have to do some digging, although given that 672,000 people have been deported under these laws, the truth is there's no shortage of these stories.
Mm.
I traveled around the country. I spoke to immigration attorneys, to criminal defense attorneys. I went to immigration detention centers and interviewed people and their family members. And it took some time, but eventually there are, as I said, no shortage of stories to really illustrate just how devastating these laws are.
They really, 600, your report says 672,593. How many of those actually have, and I don't know if you can quantify this or if you even know, but do we know how many of those actually did have, families here that were American citizens, a wife or children or something like that?
Well, what we did is we used census figures to come up with the estimate that at least 1.6 million spouses and children were left behind as a result of those deportations. And we also used that census information to come up with the estimate that literally 500,000 of those people left behind were, in fact, U.S. citizens.
Mm.
The question that we don't know the answer to, though, and something that was a part of my attempt to dig around in my research on this report, which took about a year, is how many of those 672,000 people across the 10 years that these laws have been in place, what exactly have they been deported for? We have only 1 year of data that answers what the underlying criminal convictions were, and those data show that, in fact, the vast majority were for minor offenses, for nonviolent offenses. But the other thing we don't know is how many of them were actually legal permanent residents, lawfully here in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We asked those questions, actually, of Immigration and Customs Enforcement in a FOIA request a year and a half ago, and have since then been in a FOIA battle with them. They have refused to answer those very simple questions about these laws and to give us and to give the American people that information.
Have they released any documentation to you at all? From the FOIA requests?
They've released absolutely nothing.
Well, nothing. That's remarkable because, there is legislation that is, I think, being held up now in the Senate by John Kyle of Arizona, where they're trying to, crack down, shorten the time that is allowed for the response to these federal Freedom of Information Act requests. But do you guys have a recourse when they don't respond to your FOIA requests at this point?
Well, our recourse at this point has been to file appeal after appeal, and we've now retained a pro bono counsel, a law firm that is willing to represent my organization, Human Rights Watch, on a pro bono basis, and we're going to litigate this. But what's shocking is that this is basic information that would allow the American public and members of Congress to assess whether they think these laws are actually fair. And these laws have been in place for 10 years, and yet the agency responsible has made very little information public.
Did this come out of this notion in the 90s, we need to show how tough we are on crime and on immigrants? And was it a political motive here behind these laws?
Absolutely. I would say three factors really contributed, and they were all political ones. The first one was the 93 World Trade Center bombing. The second was the initial popularity and the sense from politicians across the country that Proposition 187, which was anti-immigrant legislation in California in 94, that would allow them a lot of political traction. And the third, and frankly I find most shocking, event that clearly motivated Congress because it's in the congressional record was the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, which, as we all know, was actually perpetrated by a citizen of the United States.
Right. Well, we attacked Iraq when Saudi Arabia attacked us, so our aim is not that good, apparently. You know, it occurs to me, and I don't even know if you can speak to sort of this end of the political question here, but I've contended that this crisis, this immigration crisis that we're having, is not in fact a crisis at all. It's a ginned up political issue in an election year. It originally started coming out in 06, and I think that the Republicans, who were desperate to use something, to come up with something, had no idea they were going to get such blowback from the immigrant community. Do you see it as I see it? Is there a real immigration crisis, or is this just another ginned up political issue as you see it?
No, there's not an immigration crisis in the United States, and it has often been an issue throughout the history of the United States that is seized upon as a way to provide political traction. And what's very unfortunate is also the assumption and the erroneous conflation of immigrants, hardworking people who are in the country, many of whom are here legally, with terrorists. And so we also see a lot of political posturing and very destructive legislation that is put in place, not unlike the laws we're talking about today, but there have been laws since then that have been put in place really on the backs of immigrants. And well, whatever one has to say about the rights of non-citizens, which I believe, and of course Human Rights Watch believes, are very important to protect, we can see in the history of the United States that when we start eroding the rights of non-citizens, very often citizens are next to lose their rights.
Indeed. Let's take a very quick call. We're coming up on the top of the hour. Let's see if we can fit this in. Connie from Central Coast, California. Connie, welcome to the Peter B. Show.
I wish you didn't have to have me on such a short call. I'm a very devoted Democrat. I'm very devoted union person. I'm in a mixed marriage. So before you go calling me a racist or anything like that, I want you to know those things about me. But my little tiny family...
We got to get to your question real quickly here, Connie. I'm sorry. We're top of the hour.
Well, I'd rather not say anything than to be forced into such short circumstances.
Okay. Well, I am sorry about that. We will try to come back to this. Okay. She was very quickly, because since we're coming, she feels that she says she is a gardener and that they are, she feels that the immigrants are taking over the gardening business. And I guess it's a legitimate point of view. I would have liked to have talked to her more, but we simply don't have the time here for the moment, but we'll get back to it. Allison Parker, I want folks to check out your report. Where can that be found?
At www.hrw.org.
All right. Thanks for joining us here this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Appreciate the good work you and the folks at Human Rights Watch are doing. All right. We're going to be back with one more hour this afternoon. Plenty ahead. Our first election integrity hour of the week. And we're going to have a lot to come. Much, much more. Stay with us.